So let's see where we're up to. On Daf Chaf on the days, we spoke about the Mishnah. The Mishnah establishes that the king has the authority to take and compel the people to go out to battle, even in a Melchemes Rishus. And he has other powers and authorities that are listed in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us that he needs the approval of the Beis Din Hagol of the 70-71. And the Gemara right away objects because Tanina Chana Zimna. We already have that in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta. So why did the Mishnah here on Daf Chaf Amud Beis have to repeat what we already know? So the Gemara says that in Achinami there was no particular chiddush in our Mishnah, but since the Mishnah is listing the authority and the scope of that authority of the king, it mentions that he's motzi l'melchemes rishus and he needs the approval of the Beis Din Hagadol.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
So, the time of the Shoftim, there's no melech. Would Sanhedrin had to have been the one in that interim?
Yeah, I would think so.
To do it, and then once there's a melech, maybe things change a bit.
Right, things change. Yeah. So Hanan, what were you going to say?
So there's a difference between, like you said, the melech, and if there's not a melech, there's a difference of... That's why it's listing this, because to let you know that there's...
No, since the Mishnah is listing that, for example, it's the Mishnah says, I'll give you another example, Poreitz Lassos Lo Derech, right? Mm-hmm. Or, for example, he has a special authority to take the Biza, right? Mm-hmm. Once the Mishnah is listing the king's, the scope of the king's sovereign rule or authority, the Mishnah also mentions that he compels the people to go out to Milchama.
Right. What's the difference from that in the original Mishnah on the opening of...
Because the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta doesn't mention anything about the king. It just mentions that the Beis Din Hagadol has this authority to either approve or veto a Melchemes...
Got it.
A Melchemes Rishus.
Okay. So the original Mishnah, there was an omission of the word of the actual Melech himself.
Correct. And the reason why the Mishnah omits Melech in the beginning of the Masechta is because that Mishnah is the subject of that Mishnah, the theme of that Mishnah is the powers of Beis Din, right. In that case Beis Din Hagadol.
Gotcha.
No mention of the king. Here gotcha. We're listing and enumerating all the powers of the king, so he mentions that the king can compel the people to go after this so-called discretionary war.
Thank you.
Now, I touched on this yesterday, but I want to get a little bit more into it today. What exactly is the authority of the Beis Din Hagadol with regard to Melchemes Mitzvah? Is it that they have the veto power, and without their approval, there ain't no Melchemes Mitzvah? And I mentioned to you that there's a Rashi elsewhere that seems to indicate that the Beis Din Hagadol is only there to be mispalel on behalf of the people. So I want to expand on this a little bit. In the back of the Masifta, which I very rarely get a chance to look at, is a Yalkut Biurim, which is an anthology of Rishonim on the Masifta. And he says the following, that, let me find this, he has a paragraph that's titled the following: Ha'im ha-melech tzarech lishmo l'sanhedrin lotzeis l'melchama. When I saw that title, I was surprised. I mean, obviously, the Mishnah establishes that the melech has to listen to the Sanhedrin. And he must achieve their approval. So he quotes the Netziv Mivalozhin. And he says, Hadavar toli b'rtzono levad. You know, my eyes really fluttered when I saw this, that whether or not they go out to this battle depends solely on the will of the king. V'lachem, and therefore the king is mentioned, Muzkar Khan, B'mishnah Zub, B'malas HaMelech, amongst the authorities of the king. Shehu Yachol Lahotzi L'Mulchama. V'ein lo elo lomar l'Sanhedrin, he doesn't need the approval of Sanhedrin, he just has to notify the Sanhedrin. V'heim mechuyavim l'haskim. And they have to agree. I mean, this was, an eye-opener to me. Now, it seems to me that the Netziv that's quoted in this section of the Yalkut HaBiurim is based on the Ran, which is quoted in a different section in the Yalkut HaBiurim. Let me read to you the words of the Ran. The Ran, of course, is many centuries before the Netziv, and he says, "Ein kavonas haMishnah." Don't mistakenly interpret the Mishnah "She'eno motzi ela deBezdin shel shivim v'echad." That he, the king, needs the approval of Shem V'yach. That's wrong. So he's talking to Berzon. He's saying, Berzon, you misinterpreted the Mishnah. Shem came, because if that be true, that the king depends upon the approval of the Bezin Shal Shem V'yachad, Einzu Mailolo. That would not be one of the great authorities of the king listed here in the Mishnah. Elohi Saron. The Mishnah would be telling me, paradoxically, that the king does not have authority to take us out to Milchama. The enumeration here is the king's powers. Ela, but rather, kavonas haMishnah is sheyochol lahotzi asa'am olach nisam kirtzono v'zu achas mimalos hamalchus. And again, the emphasis here is kirtzono, according to his will. So again, what is the role here of the Bez Nagol? And here I quote this Netziv, who says that Ein lo ela lomar l'Sanhedrin, as if to say he sends a message, a notification to Sanhedrin, but they don't have veto power. Then he quotes a Rashi that I mentioned to you yesterday in Masechta Brachos on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, that Nimlachim b'Sanhedrin. Why are we notifying the Sanhedrin? She is palalu aleihem. And then he says that when the Gemara says tmina chada zimna, why did the Mishnah have to mention that the king takes the people out to battle? In the Melchemes Rishus, we already have it in the first Mishnah. According to the Ran, that's very difficult. All the Mishnah mentions at the beginning of the Masechta is Bez Nagol, and it seems that Bez Nagol plays at best a secondary role in this decision and to coerce the people to go out to battle in the Melchemes Rishus. Our Mishnah here is establishing the primary authority and decision making control that's in the hands of the Melech. So what are you telling me, Tmina Chadazimna? He says, Eina al Masha Nemar B'Mishnah. The Gemara's objection was raised, the question the Gemara raises, not on the fact that it says in that Mishnah, Shiyochal Melech Lo Ksiyom Bal Korcha, that the Melech has the power to coerce the people to go out to this battle. Ella, the Gemara was only asking Al Hemshech HaMishnah. Why did the Mishnah have to mention Bez Nagodol? That was a repeat performance. That we already know from the first Mishnah in the Perek. Rabosa, I have to submit to you that things are not clear here, in my mind at least. I thought that this was a pretty simple Gemara, but it's not at all. Because based on the Ran and based on the Netziv, which and Arashi and Brochus, we're changing entirely our understanding of the role of Bez Nagodol. And for that matter, totally changing our understanding of the independent, absolute, unquestioned authority of the Melech to go out to and force the people to go out to a battle of the Melchemes Rishus. It's a whole different story. And then the Gemara's question of Chotanu Lechadazimna becomes almost incomprehensible. What do you mean, Tanu Lechadazimna? All we have in the first Mishnah is Bez Nagodol. They're not playing any major role over here. You know, we got to get their their bracha, their tefillah. So that's just what I want to share with you, that there's a lot more to this sugya than meets the eye. You know, if we walk out of here assuming that Bezna Gol has veto power against the king in a decision to go out to discretionary war, we'd be making a major mistake here. At least according to the Ran and the Nitziv, and he doesn't quote anyone who argues against them, the Beis Din HaGadol is playing a secondary, if any, role at all, you know. And it doesn't seem like Beis Din HaGadol has any ability to veto the decision of the king.
The note here in Artsworth says specifically that it mentions it because there's a limitation to the king's power.
So this
and
must be
to quote the look at the to see the Tosfos Yontif on that.
Ah, so this must be another sheet of the Tosfos Yontif. Now, is the Tosfos Yontif aware of this Ran? Is he aware of this Nitziv? You know, the Nitziv is after the Tosfos Yontif, but the Ran was way before the Tosfos Yontif. Was the Tosfos Yontif aware of this Ran? I don't know.
Well, they first start off with a note about the Ran. The Ran states that the Mishnah is revealing a royal license.
And I think what he means by royal license is that he doesn't need the approval of the Beis Din HaGadol.
It's contradictory.
So there is apparently some sort of a controversy about how to interpret the respective roles of the king and the Beis Din HaGadol with regard to Milchemes Mitzvah. Okay, let's go on to the new sugya for today. First we'll get the place, you know, let's put our finger on the place and in the Gemara here on Daf Chaf Amud Beis, and then I want to give you a bit of an introduction. We started this introduction yesterday. So we are now on Daf Chaf Amud Beis. Omar Rav, this is Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, excuse me. This is the first of the wide lines. So by introduction, let me read to you an entire section of seven psukim in Shmuel Aleph Perek Ches. What happens is that the people come to demand a king, and they come in front of the leader of the Jewish nation at that point, and that is Shmuel. And here's the response of Shmuel. Vayomer, you should know, Zeyem Mishpat HaMelech, this is the law of the king, meaning the sovereign rulership of the king. Asher Yimloch Aleichem, who will now, by your request, be appointed to lord it over you, so to speak. He'll be the king Aleichem on you. Number one, Espenechem Yikach, he's going to take away your sons, v'samlo b'merkavto u'b'parashov. He's going to conscript them to drive his chariots and to ride his horses. V'ratzu l'fnei merkavto, he's going to take your sons to run in front of the chariots of the king. Number two, l'asimlo sare alofim v'sare chamishim. He's going to appoint officers for the thousands and for the fifties. Lachrosh Harisha Velikta Ktsira. He can decide if he wants to. The king can take away your fields and plow them and harvest them. Lassos Klei Milchamto Uklei Richbo. He'll confiscate whatever tools, whatever materials are necessary to create these chariots for his battle, for his wars. That's as far as the conscripting the sons and taking away possessions. Number three, the Espinos Sechem Yikach. He can now conscript your daughters, Lerakachos, Letabachos, Leofos, to take care of all the supplies and prepare all the food. V'esdoseihem, Stoseichem, V'eskarmeichem, V'eseisechem, Atov Yikach, V'nosan Le'avodam, he can confiscate all your best fruits in order to feed his servants. V'zareichem v'karmeichem yasor v'nosam l'sarisul havodov. He's going to take away from the vines. Es abdechem es shifso sechem v'es pachuchechem atov es chamechem yikach v'yosol melachto. He can conscript your servants, your slaves, and your handmaids, maidens, and take them to serve in his court. He can take away bachurechem, your young men, and conscript them for the army, or conscript them to do the malacha. So nechem yasar, he's going to take 10% of all your sheep. V'atem tiyu lo la'avodim. I mean, that's the last punchline. And basically, you're slaves to the king. So here the Gemara presents a machlokas. How do we understand this section of the Torah? This section of the Tanakh, I mean, it's called the Parshas HaMelech. This is the only place in Tanakh where the Navi details the scope of the authority of the king, how far he can go. Take away your children, take away your possessions. It's all in the king's power. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmul Kala Amar Parshas Melech, Melech Mutarbo. Take this parsha at simple level, straightforward. Anything that it says in the parsha mutabo, the Torah gives license and permits the king to do anything that's mentioned in this parsha. Don't think that in any way Shmuel in this parsha is exaggerating or warning the people or scaring the people, you know, just to beef it up and be dramatic about it. No. This is not drama. This is halacha. Melech mutarbo. He's allowed to do this.
Rav and Shmuel both agree on that?
I don't know about Rav yet. Rav, I think, is going to disagree. But what we're up to now is Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda, the name of Shmuel. So this is Shmuel's opinion. Rav has a different opinion. Rav Amar Lo Nemra Parsha Zu El La'ayim Aleihem. The reason why Shmuel gave them this whole harangue, this whole presentation, is not because this is what a king is allowed to do. Most of what's written here in Shmuel, in Sefer Shmuel, I mean, is just an exaggeration. It's just a scare tactic, la'ayim aleihem, to threaten them. They should realize what they're getting into, and they should have the awe of the king, because the king, although he's not permitted to do everything that it says here, he may exercise his monarchical power and do these things. And why is it important for Shmuel, the Navi Shmuel, to impress the people about the awesome power of the king? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "Som tasim alecha melech," you shall place upon yourself a king. And Chazal Darshan Shetei Moso Alecha, that you have to have a fear and awe of the king. It doesn't mean that the king is allowed to do all these things. You know, he can just decide, well, he wants more servants, and therefore he's going to take more of your children, he's going to take more of your shvachos, he's going to add to the food, and he needs more cooks in the kitchen. No. That's not just a carte blanche. This is not an absolute heter to permit the king to do everything. But you have to realize that once you appoint the king, you are under his control. Atem tiyu lo la'avodim. You have to treat him with awe, because you have to realize and you have to sort of shudder about the possibilities here. If the king decides, whether it means to abuse his powers or to extend his powers, or he decides within his discretion that he has to maximize his powers and he's going to take away this from you and that from you, that's going to create an awe of the king. Now again, a lot of what's going on here, I think, below the surface in this controversy, and how to understand Parshas Melech, whether it's Shmuel or whether it's Rav, is whether or not the Jewish people were really justified in asking for a king. On the one hand, appointing a king is one of the 613 mitzvahs. But on the other hand, when the people come and they complain to Shmuel that all the nations of the world have kings and we don't have a king, it sounds like what motivates them is to imitate the Goyim. And to some extent, Shmuel may have been very sensitive about this, because Shmuel was actually playing the leadership role. And did I do anything to you? Did I take away your possessions? Did I mistreat you? Was there any injustice that I brought upon you? And Shmuel, therefore, is in a very kind of defensive position here. He's not excited about the fact that the people look left and right and see all the goyim, and they each have a king, and then therefore the Jews want a king like the goyim.
Wasn't also the time of Shmuel Magid that things were really good. I mean, things were, there was not machlokes, though.
Shmuel was, as far as I know, again, I haven't learned Shmuel in a good couple of years, but as far as I remember, it was moving pretty smoothly. You know, things were smooth. No one really suspected Shmuel of in any way oppressing the people. He was a very good good leader, you know, very compassionate leader. He went out of his way to try to help everyone. Once you appoint the king, you know, you run the risk, the danger of that king becoming a tyrant. I mean, we know this from history. We know from Jewish history as well. So the sheet of Rav here is that Shmuel was not giving a list of, hey, this is what the king is meant to do. No, this is what the king might possibly do if he expands his control over the people. And this is all to instill the fear of the Lord in their hearts, the fear of the king in their hearts.
Wasn't it Shmuel was also conveying somehow that Ben Israel wasn't ready or right to have a king just at that particular time, point in time?
I don't know about ripe or ready. You might know something, Reuven, that I don't know, and you'll have to share that with me. But I'm just saying, Shmuel thought that there's no need for a melech. That although, again, I want to repeat, appointing a king is one of the 613 mitzvahs. But the 613 mitzvahs fall into two categories. One category is, this is what the Torah wants. And the other category is, this is what the Torah says is necessary if a certain situation arises. I'll give you an example. The Torah says that if a man divorces his wife, he's got to write a get, and he's got all the laws in the parasha of get in parashas Ki Tetzeh. That's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Would you say that the Torah is advocating divorce? The Gemara says that if a man divorces his wife, is mizbeach morid olav d'mos. But the answer is that there's certain mitzvahs that we count in Taryag. I'll give you another example. Neder. Neder is written in, is one of the 613. Not only that, Hataras Nedarim is one of the 613. And I can give you so many examples. What the Torah is saying is that if and when, you know, you need to achieve a certain goal for whatever reason, I'm not telling you, I'm advocating and recommending that you do this, but if the need arises and under certain conditions, this is the way you got to go about doing it. The Torah sets up the regulations, the protocol, and then it's counted as a mitzvah. The Torah is not advocating that you should take a neder, or the Torah is not advocating that you should be matir a neder, but if you take a neder, then you fulfill that neder and you get brownie points. So the question is the Torah telling us to appoint a king, or is the Torah telling us that if the need arises because the people come pushing for it, then we appoint a king? And that's going to be the Gemara that we want to study now. I'll just fast forward for just 1 minute, take one line of the Gemara that we're going to get to soon, out of, you know, ahead of context. Rav Noray Omer, Lo Nemra Parsha Zu Ela Keneged Tar Umasan. Tarumasa means because the people came to complain and they said, well, why is it that the other nations of the world have a king and we don't? And that, therefore, the Torah sort of capitulated, if I could use that word, and allowed us to respond in the affirmative, yes, we will appoint the king. But again, it's only keneged tarumasa. This is not l'chatchila, the best way that the Torah wanted to organize the Jewish life. So I don't know, Reuven, again, I'm always questioning that you know, you may know things that I don't know, but if you ask me, are they right for it, I would say to you, we're never right for it, according to the Shita. There is no situation in which we're right for it. If we're right for it, it means that Nebuch, we have Taromas, and we can't seem to manage without a king, because we look here, we look there, and every other nation has a king. Again, I'm just pulling one line out of the Gemara that's coming up around the bend. There are many other lines in this Gemara which would also indicate that the request for a king was not, we say in Yiddish, zum zach, you know, it wasn't to the point. It wasn't something that was meant to be. And this mitzvah of appointing a king is what we call a reshus. It's not a real mitzvah. It's a necessary evil, so to speak, under certain circumstances where the people are pushing for it. Let's go through the Gemara inside, because again, I, in a very unfair way, I pulled out a line that we didn't even get to yet. So let's get to that line. The Gemara says, "Kitanoi," that the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is really in effect a machlokas tanoi way before. Rav Yossi Omer, Rav Yossi is of the opinion in the Braisa Kola Omer B'Parshas Melech Melech Mutarbo. This is what the king is meant to do, and he has license to do so. Rav Yehuda Omer Lo Nemar Parsha Zu Ela Kedei La'ayim Aleihem. This Parsha was only Shmuel coming to warn them about the threat, about the danger involved in appointing a king, because the king may misuse his powers. Shenemar Som Tosim Olecha Mel Shetei Moso Olecha, you won't be able to fight against the king, because the Torah says once you appoint a king, you have to have ema for the king, awe and fear of the king. You cannot contradict the king. You are really, in a sense, in his hands. You know, the king has you around the neck. He can do what he wants. He can conscript your children for this purpose, for that purpose, take your money away. He can tax you. You know, that's always a very serious issue, taxes. And v'chein ha'yirav Yehuda Omer Sholosh mitzvos nitztavu Yisrael b'knisasam la'aretz. Now this is a very, very important piece. We're going to see it over and over again. Here we see the name of Yehuda. Later we'll see it with a slightly different version in the name of Rabbi Yossi. That when the people of Israel entered into the land, they became obligated in three mitzvos. So these are the three mitzvos that form a unit, an entity, and are obligatory when they come into the land and settle therein. First is Lahamid Lev Melech. Second is Lahachris Zaro Shalom Molech. And third is Livnos Lahem Beis Habechira. Now, let's go one by one. The first of the list of the three is Lahamid Lahem Melech. This is a parsha in Dvarim, Parshas Shoftim, and there it says, "Ki tavola arts asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha v'yirishtov v'yishavtem ba v'yomra v'yomarta, and you will declare asima olai melech kechol agoyim asher svivosai." When you'll enter the land that God gave you to inherit the land and to dwell therein, and you will claim, you will declare, "Let me put upon myself a king like all the other nations that surround me." So under those circumstances, we appoint a king. Next, Lahachris Zaro Shel Amolek. Now, in the note here, he quotes Parshas Ki Tetzeh. And there it says, "Va'yah ba'niach Hashem alkech lecha mikol eivecha misaviv ba'aretz asher Hashem alkech nosein lecha nachla l'rishta timche ezeichra molik mitachas hashemayim lo tishkach." Right, and then we start banging. This pasuk is not the only parsha in the Torah that commands us to destroy Amalek. The first occasion in which the Torah commands us to destroy Amalek is where? Which parsha? Anybody know? It's Bishalach. In Parshas Bishalach, Moshe Rabbeinu appoints Yoshua to be the military chief and fight the battle against Amalek. And there it says, "Milchamol Hashem ba'Amalek." It's very interesting that this footnote quotes the pasuk of Parshas Ki Tetzeh, which doesn't mention the word milchama. You know, the impression you get here is that the king is going to take us out to battle, and in this case, the battle is against Amalek. I mean, that mitzvah is written in Parshas Bishalach. Who am I to question the Masifta? But he doesn't quote any source, so I have a right to question. And finally, the third mitzvah in this triumvirate is going to be building the Beis HaBechira, the Beis HaMikdash. And that's in Parshas Re'eh. It says, "Va'avartim esay yardei v'yishavtim ba'aretz asher Hashem elokeichem manchiloschem v'hiniach lechem mikol eveichem misaviv v'yishavtim betach v'ayoha makom asher yivcha Hashem elokeichem bo l'shakein shmo shom shom ataviu eskol asher anochi mitzaveh eschem." And they have to build the Beis HaBechira. So now, let's go back to Shmuel. The people come to Shmuel, and they request a king. Now, according to this presentation, Rabbi Yehuda, that there are three mitzvot that we're obligated in once we enter the land, that it makes sense that the people should say, well, the first on that list is to appoint a king. Now, if we go back to Shmuel, I'm talking now about the Amora Shmuel, not the Novi Shmuel. He says, "Kol Omer b'Parshas Melech, Melech Muter Bo." It sounds like, according to that approach, Melech Muter Bo, it means that right? The Torah commands us to appoint a king. And we have to have Ema for the king. So when the Navi Shmuel lists the powers of the king, then according to the Amora Shmuel, he's telling you what the king is allowed to do. And the reason why Shmuel has to do so is because of the mitzvah of Som Tosim Olech HaMelech. So the pasuk first says, Ki Tavola Oretz Asher Hashem Elokecha, etc. gives you V'yomar Tosim Olech HaMelech, Olai Melech Kechol HaGoyim. And then it says Som Tosim Olech HaMelech, and Chazal attach Shetehe Emos Olecha. Now, what is Emos Olecha? You have to understand and appreciate what the powers of the king are. And according to the Amora Shmuel, it's Melech Muterbo. And the impression you get here is that this is a mitzvah. This is a mitzvah. In other words, at this point in the Brisa, we're not concerned about the introduction of the Amarta Asim Alai Melech, which sounds like the precondition for the mitzvah of appointing the king. Forget about that. We'll have that later. Right now we're oblivious to the V'yomarta v'asim alai melech, k'chol ha'goyim. Right now we're saying that the people enter to the land, they have to appoint a king, and the king will take them out to battle, destroy their enemies, destroy Amalek, and then we'll build the Beis HaMikdash. So that's one approach. So in other words, at this point in the Braisa, we're justifying the desire and the request of the people at the time of Shmuel HaNavi, when they came to request that we appoint a king, because there is a mitzvah when they enter into the land to appoint a king. The Shmuel, in that context, says, you know, before you fulfill this mitzvah, you should know what Amos Melech is all about. You have to have fear of him, because at any day, at any moment, he can come and conscript your children. Then the Braisa continues with Rav Noroi, which we mentioned earlier, that really the Jewish people were not justified, and there's no independent absolute mitzvah that's unconditional to appoint a king just because we enter into the land. We can find other ways of appointing leaders and Sanhedrin and Gedolim and Torah. We don't need a melech, but Keneged Tarumosa. But they came to complain. And now you have to assume that when the parasha in Chumash says that the people, the Amarta, will come forward and say, Asim alai melech kol agoyim, the pasuk was already foretelling the future of what's going to happen down the line at the time of Shmuel HaNavi. That the people are going to bang on the table and they're going to say, Asim alai melech, we need a king because the goyim have kings and we also want to have a king. So that's called tarumosam, when they come with a kvesh, with a complaint. We don't have a king, we want a king. We want to be like all the other nations. And Rav Noroi proves this, Shenemar, because the Pasuk says that when we enter into the land and we inherit the land and dwell there in Amarta, Asim Alai Melech. Kechol Agoyim. So there's no mitzvah here to appoint a king. There's no absolute mitzvah. There's a mitzvah, according to Rav Noroi, to destroy Amalek. There's a mitzvah, according to Rav Noroi, to establish a base of Mikdash. There is no mitzvah to appoint a king. If the people come and demand a king, then we will appoint a king. It's like a person who feels he has to stop smoking, so he takes a neder. Okay, that's his business, but there's no mitzvah to take a neder. A man decides he doesn't like his wife's cooking, so he wants to give her a get. There's no mitzvah to give her a get, but yet it's counted in the Tariyag, because the Torah says if you want to break up a marriage, you need a get. You want to have a political monarchy, then you need to appoint a king and hear the laws of a king, and hear the rights of the king. But it's all keneged haramosav. It's only because the people came forward, asim alai melech. That's Rav Noroi. The first opinion, the Brisa, seems to advocate that there's an absolute mitzvah, three mitzvahs. One of them, the first of the three, is to appoint a king. I don't know, according to that shita, which is identified here as Rabbi Yehuda's shita, why the Torah says, v'amarta asim alai melech, which makes it conditional. That there's only a mitzvah to appoint a king because the people came forward and demanded a king. Why is that so? I don't know how Rabbi Yehuda is going to interpret those words. Tanya, now the Gemara brings another opinion about this request to appoint a king. In a braisa that quotes Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it's the Kenim Shebedar, that the nation was divided up into two categories. One category was justified in asking for a king, the other was not. The Zakenim Shemidar, the wise men of that generation of Shmuel and Navi, Kehogen Shalu, they were asking in the right way. Their kavanah, their intention was correct. Shenemar, and that's what it says in Shmuel and Navi. It says Tnolanu Melech Lishafteinu. Lishafteinu means to make sure that justice is implemented, and to those who refuse and are deviants, punish them. That's the power of the king, and that's l'shafteinu, and that was well justified. Aval ami aretz shebahem, but the rank and file citizens, kilkalu, they were asking in a bad way. They wanted the king to go out and fight their battles like any other king of any other nation. Shenemar v'ayinu gam anachnu kichol agoyim Ushvatenu Malkenu Yotzalifanenu Minilcham Es Milchamosenu. That's called Shalom Kahogan. They didn't rely on God. They didn't have the faith that God would see to it that they could go out to battle and defeat their enemies with Siyata Dishmaya, the help of God. They thought we need a king. And they put all their vested, all their faith in the king. And that's what all the Goyim do. You know, we have a great king and he will take us out to battle and be victorious. That's what the Jews wanted, a king to be victorious. Now here I want to share with you a question of the Aruch Lener. The Aruch Lener, I think I mentioned too many times, was a great genius. He lived about two centuries ago in Germany. His name was Ettlinger. And he asks the following question. If you look in the Psukim, then it says explicitly with regard to the Zakenim that when the Zakenim came to request the king, Shmuel was very upset about it. And he goes to God and he prays to God, and Hashem responds to him, Lo osomasu, God says to them, it's not that they hate you, but they find you despicable, and that's why they want to replace you. Ki imosimasu. That really they are mois in me, in God, meaning that they are not trusting me. So how could the Gemara say here, the Brice in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, that Zakenim is Kehogen Shalu, when Shmuel was all ruffled, you know, his ridges were ruffled here, his feathers were ruffled, and he said, what's going on? Are they rejecting me? And Hashem said, oh, they're not rejecting you, but they're rejecting me. I mean, that's not called Kehogen. So the Marsha suggests the following. How would this Rabbi Eliezer interpret the psukim that clearly indicate that even this Canaan were not justified in asking for a king? Rabbi Elazar Yefarshes HaPsukim Shazkenim Sholu Rak Tno Lanu Melech L'Shoftenim. And the words Kechol HaGoyim, even though they're placed into the mouth, if you take the Torah literally, the Tanakh literally, into the mouth of this Canaan, no, Kechol HaGoyim was an addition that was added on by the Amei Aretz. It was they who said Kechol HaGoyim. So it's the Amei Aretz who said Kechol HaGoyim, they were Sholu Shalo Kehogen, they wanted to imitate the Goyim. But the Gemara says that this Kenim Shalu Kehogen, because this Kenim want L'Shaftenu, they're not interested in imitating the Goyim, they just think that the king will facilitate the ability of the community of Israel to fight its battles, to win its wars, and to defeat those who try to deviate from justice and to uproot law and order. So that's the sheet of the Marsha. Now I mentioned to you that there are three mitzvahs that form a unit that are obligatory when they enter into the land, and we saw that in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. Now we're going to see something very similar in the name of Rabbi Yossi. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer Sholosh Mitzvahs Nitztavu Yisrael B'Knisosan La'aretz Lahamid Lehem Melech Lahachri Zaro Shalom Molech V'Livdos Lehem Beis HaBechira. So far, Rabbi Yossi is just reiterating what we saw in Rabbi Yehuda, but now he embellishes it. The Eini Yodea Ezi Mehen Tchila. I don't know what the sequence is. There are three mitzvahs, but can I fulfill them in any order that I choose? It's up to my discretion to decide where, when, and how. So, Eini Yodea Ezi Mehen Tchila. Kishu Omer, the Torah says in Parashas B'Shalach, this is at the end of B'Shalach, it says Ki Yod Al Kes Ka. Now Kes means a throne. It sounds like the Pasuk is referring to the throne of the Almighty up in the heavens, but that's not how Rabbi Yossi is going to interpret this Kes Ka. He's going to find elsewhere that the phrase Kes Ka refers to the king, the throne of the king, the physical, you know, human king, the monarch. And then, once it's Yad Al Kes Ka, that means the king is already seated in the throne, meaning he's established his rulership and he's been appointed as king, then Milchamol Hashem Ba'Amolek. Then the king will take us out to battle against Amolek. Kevi Omer, Lahamid Lemelech Tchila, we derive from this pasuk of Ki Yad Al Kes Ka, that the first mitzvah in the sequence has to be appointing a king. And what does the word kisei mean? The throne? The ein kisei el lemelech. And we should not interpret that kisei as referring to the kisei hakovod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the melech malchei hamlochim, but rather the kisei is to the human king. That's his throne. Shenemar, because I'll prove it to you from Apostle in Melachim Aleph with regard to Shlomo Melech. It says, Vayeshev Shlomo al kisei Hashem lemelech. So you see again the phrase Kes Ka, Kisei Hashem, and that's referring to the throne of Shlomo Melech who's Lamelech. And once the king is sitting on his throne, meaning he is now well established, well entrenched as the king, then he goes out to fight the battle of Melchemes Amalek. But wait a second. There's another mitzvah here. Let's not disregard and ignore the mitzvah of building the Beis Hamikdash. Adayin Eini Yodea Im Livnos Lehem Beis HaBechira Tchila O Lahachri Zara Shel Amalek Tchila. We know now that the king has to be appointed, and then and only then will there be a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. But we're not sure if the mitzvah of destroying Amalek takes precedence over the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash. Perhaps after we appoint the king, then we should build the Beis HaMikdash before we go out to battle against Amalek. Kishu Omer, but the pasuk says, "Ve'niach lochem mikol evechem, etc. Misaviv yishavtem betach." That when God will give you respite from all your enemies, and you will sit in security, is then v'ayam mokom asher yivcha Hashem Elokeichem then you will build the Beis HaMikdash. So it's clear from the sequence of the verses that first we have to be in a state of Yeshavtem Betach, we have defeated our enemies. That's the battle, the war that the Melech is going to take us out to destroy our enemies. And then after we're free from our enemies and we're living in perfect security, then we build the Beis HaMikdash. Shavi Omer, therefore we derive the conclusion, and now Rabbi Yossi is going to prove this historically. Now Rabbi Yossi, how many Bati Mikdashas do we build? Well, two, and then there's going to be a third. So now we have the first. The first was built by whom?
Shlomo.
But he didn't do so until his father David, the king, went out to battle against Amalek. Who was the king's right-hand man, his military commander-in-chief, who eventually is going to run for prime minister? Right? Who's the army chief? You remember his name? Yoav.
Oh, Yoav.
Right, Yoav. So David sends Yoav out on a military campaign to destroy Amalek. The reason David had to do that is because he wanted to pave the way for the third mitzvah. He was appointed as a king. The third mitzvah would be building the Beis HaMikdash. Who would actually build the Beis HaMikdash? Shlomo. But before Shlomo would have license to build the Beis HaMikdash, first we have to fulfill the mitzvah of Lahachris Zaro Shal Amalek. And that's what David did. He appointed and sent Yoav on the mission to destroy Amalek. Uksiv. I'm sorry, I skipped a line. V'chein b'David u'omer v'ayhiki yashav ha'melot David v'beiso v'ashem hiniach lo misaviv mikol oivav. After David's throne, his kingship was well established and Hashem destroyed all the enemies, meaning that the Amalekim were destroyed. Then uksiv v'yomer ha'melech el nasan ha'navi, and he says, Rei anochi yoshev beis harozen, I'm sitting in this beautiful capital, this palace, and Aron Elokim yoshev betoch hayiria. And where's the Aron that had to sit in the Kodesh Kodashim in the Beis HaMikdash? It's in a yiria, it's in a tent. I'm sitting in a beautiful capital palace, and the Aron HaKodesh is in the yiria. Now is the time to build the Beis HaMikdash. Nasan tells David that he will not build the Beis HaMikdash, but his son Shlomo will build the Beis HaMikdash. And all this is because Milchemes Amalek has to come first, and then and only then do we have the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash. So David paves the way for the building of the Beis HaMikdash at the hands of his son Shlomo. So who can tell me, without looking in the Gemara, what the sequence of mitzvahs is once they enter the land? Can I quiz you on that? Number one?
Appointed king.
Number two?
Wipe out a knowledge.
Excellent. And number three?
Establish the basement.
Establish the basement. Excellent. This you have to know in the middle of your sleep. I mean it seriously. So all those today who want to build the Beis HaMikdash, they have to realize that first we need a melech, and then the melech has to destroy all our enemies. And when it'll be batuach misaviv mikol oivechem, and then you destroy that Amalek, then you can build the Beis HaMikdash. So I don't know. You know, today there's a whole atmosphere of let's build the Beis HaMikdash. I don't think we're ready for it yet, or as Reuven would say, we're not right for it yet. And the reason for that is because we first have to appoint a king, and then we need to destroy Amalek, and Amalek is really very powerful. Now, if I would ask you based on this Gemara to answer the following question, you should have a clear-cut answer. Did David HaMelech destroy Amalek? I mean, obviously Yoav, he was the military camp commander. So just based on this Gemara, forget about anything that you may think, or you might try to figure out, why am I asking this question? You know what I mean? You always try to figure out when the teacher asks a question, what's the drain here? You know what I mean? But just based on this Gemara, what would be your answer in the affirmative or in the negative? Did David, with Yoav's help, destroy Amalek?
No.
No? So why did Shlomo HaMelech build the Beis HaMikdash? Right, we just finished establishing that you have to fulfill the mitzvah of Lahachris Zara Shalmog first, and only then you build the Beis HaMikdash. And the proof was from David HaMelech. But obviously, if I asked you the question, the answer is more complex, because Yoav made a big boo-boo. Yoav destroyed the male members of Amalek, but not the female members. And the one who really made the boo-boo, believe it or not, was Yoav's Rebbe. We don't know his name. We don't know exactly how old Yoav was when he heard from his Rebbe in Cheder, his Malame Tinokos, that when it says Timchez Zecher Amalek, you read it as Zachar Amalek. In other words, Zayin Chof Reish can be read in two ways, depending upon how you vocalize it. It could be Zecher Amalek with a Tzera under the Zayin, or it could be Zachar Amalek with a Kameitz under the Zayin. And the Rebbe made a big mistake. And Yoav, when he heard from the king, from David, that he has to go out and fulfill this mitzvah, he thought the mitzvah was Zachar. How do I know this? From a Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara in Baba Basra speaks about Malamni Tinokos, and how crucial it is that the Malamni Tinokos understand the psukim, the verses in the Torah, and to demonstrate how dangerous it could be if Chalila, the Malami Tinokos, doesn't know how to interpret the pasuk. The Gemara quotes the episode of Yoav. Yoav comes back to David after the battle against Amalek, and he says, "I fulfilled your wish." And David says, "What about all these ladies? You were meant to destroy them too." So Yoav looks at David, he says, "What are you talking about? It says Timches Zachar Amalek, and I destroyed all the males. Some of the females may have been pregnant. Who knows what happened over there?"
There is a mice of some of them being pregnant. It's brought down, right?
Yeah. So I'm just telling you that this Gemara is very difficult, because the Gemara assumes that the mitzvah of Mechias HaMalek, Lahachris Zara HaMalek, was fulfilled at the time of David HaMelech. Hence, Shlomo had the license to build the Beis HaMikdash. But in truth, the mitzvah of Mechias HaMalek was not fulfilled. Very difficult. Okay. Amar Reish Lakish. B'tchila Molach Shlomo Al Hel Yonin. This is an agadic statement of Reish Lakish about the Malchus of Shlomo. Right? We had a pasuk before, Vayeshev Shlomo Kisei Hashem LeMelech. That's how we proved that Case Ka is a reference to the throne of the human king. Now the Gemara tells us another drasha on this same pasuk. First, in the early stages, Shlomo HaMelech reigned over the heavenly tzvakos, the tzvakos hashamayim. That's called the Elyonim. These are the Malachim and the Ruchos that are up in the higher spheres. And Shlomo HaMelech was gozer on them, gzeros, and they would fulfill his will. He had reign and sovereignty and control over the Tzva Maron. Now it could be that these Malachim, I don't know if you remember the Ramban more than once in his commentary on the Torah tells us that each nation had its own Sar, its own Malach up in Shamayim. Could be that Shlomo HaMelech controlled all those Sarim. Shenemar Vayeshev Shlomo al Kisei Hashem LeMelech. And the Kisei Hashem is a reference to the Elyonim. Ulebasof Molach al HaTachtonim. Now this is an implicit critique of Shlomo HaMelech. Does anybody know what Shlomo HaMelech's major failing was? His iniquity. Anybody?
He married.
Exactly. Women. He married women that were not Jewish. And as a result, Lebasov, all he got was Molach al-Tachtonim. He was no longer Melech al Elyonim. He tainted his own spiritual personality. Shlomo is a very complicated personality. We know that in Chazal he's considered great, but yet, you know, in Tanakh, you know, the indication is that he failed in this way, in this area, you know, all the wives that he took and from different nations. Now, how does Reish Lakish know this? Shenemar, you know, initially the Torah says that Shlomo sat on the Kisei Hashem, but now it says, Ki hu rode bechol ever anor mitifsach v'ad aza. And the Tanakh goes out of its way to limit the boundaries or the borders of Shlomo's sovereignty to the exclusion of Shamayim. He had no control over the Elyonim. He lost his control over the Elyonim because he himself sank to a spiritual low insofar as he married Noshim Nochrios.
So it's just the same, basically, you're just going to rule land only and up to Aza and that's it. There's nothing spiritual, right. Nothing.
And the reason why the Tanakh says who wrote that, meaning he has control over this, that, and then up until, is to tell you not beyond, meaning up in Shamayim. He has no longer control over Shamayim, over the Elyon. He forfeited that. And here we have machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Chad Omar, Tifsach, where is this located? Where is this area called Tifsach? Where is this located? Besof Olam, it's at the end, the extreme end of the world. Aza Besof Olam, and the other extreme, the other polar extreme, would have been called Aza. So it means that the king, in this case Shlomo, had control, sovereignty over the entire world, but only this world down in the land. V'chadomar, according to another emperor, Tiftach v'Aza v'Adi Adodi Aviyasu, they were next door to each other, they were continuous cities. Ukshem Shemolach al Tiftach v'Al Tiftach v'Al Aza, Kach Molach al Kol Olam Kulo. In other words, it's true that Shlomo Melech reigned over the entire world, but not because from Tifsach to Aza is from one end of the world to the other, but rather it means that just like he reigned over Tifsach and Aza, he also reigned over the entire world. And we interpret the pasuk ki hu rode bechol ever hanar kifishu rode mi Tifsach v'ad Aza. Now the Gemara brings more of a statement of Reish Lakish. Ulevasof l'molach ela al Yisrael. At the very end of his career, this is stage 3, Shlomo HaMelech only had sovereign rulership over the Jewish people, not over any other nations on the world, on the face of the earth. Shenemar, Ani Koheles Ha'isi Melech al Yisrael. And Koheles was written in the end of his life. So he goes from the greats to the middle stage and all the way down to the lowest stage. Not only that, but there is a pasuk in Koheles, Divrei Koheles ben David Melech bi Yerushalayim, and now it's not only Yisrael, but it's only Yerushalayim, Ulebasof l'molech ela al Yerushalayim. Even that is not enough. He reaches the lowest of the levels, as it says in Shir HaShirim, Hine mitoso shel Shlomo, Ulebasof l'molech ela al mitoso. And even that he lost. Lebasov, and this is Ashmedai's Ol Gemara Gittin, Lo Molach Ela Al Maklo. He only had control over his staff that he held in his hand. Shenemar Vizeh Hayachelki Mikol Amolid. But I just want to read another two lines to finish up to the two dots. And then we'll review this last piece of Gemara about Shlomo's various madregas when he goes from the highest down to the lowest. Belineder on Sunday, but Nechleku, we have now Machlok Shin Rav and Shmuel Chad Omar, when it says Zehoya Chelki Mikol Amoli Maklo, that the meaning of this pasuk is his makel. And that's what he was left with at the end of his life after all his amelus, all his work. V'chad omar gundo. Gundo means the beged, the clothing that he wore. That's what he ended up with. So the Gemara brings the following machlokas: Hadar o lo hadar? Was Shlomo Melech able to go back up the ladder? He had gone down the ladder to the lowest level. Rabu Shmuel, again a machlokas between Rabu and Shmuel. Chad Omar Hadar, one opinion is that he went back to his full malchus. The Chad Omar Lo Hadar, Shlomo never went back to his state, his original status as Melech. Mandi Omar Lo Hadar, according to Mandi Omar, that Shlomo never went back to his malchus. Then Mitchila from the beginning, Malach. The Hejot. In other words, he starts as a Melech and he ends up as a Hejot. Hejot means an ordinary citizen. Umandi Omar Hadar. But according to the other opinion, Shlomo goes back to his Malchus. Is that it means that Shlomo Molach, he's a Melech. The Hejot, he becomes a Hejot. The Melech, he goes back again to be a king. So the question is there a stage in which Shlomo Melech regains his original status as a Melech? That is a machlokas which Amud Hashem, Bli Neder, will pick up on Yom Rishon. So everyone should have a great Shabbos.